Welcome to the TWID Show. I am Chris Wink, your host and the CEO of Technically, a news site about local economies and change. Each week, the TWID Show dives into topics on building better companies with leaders who are doing just that. We are an extension of Technically's This Week in Jobs newsletter, which you can join at Technically Subscribe. This week, in offices around the country, there is a chronic condition confronting millions of professionals. It renders them less productive, less well-slept, financially vulnerable. Many hide it from their employers. It is called parenthood. We're going to talk about how you support your working parents in the always challenging dynamic that has been made a little bit more complicated of the last few months. To do that, I have three great friends. Juliana Fignotti is a senior recruiter at CloudTamer, the 41-person cloud management firm. Melissa Richardson is the talent manager of Diacom, 160-person ERP software firm. Shelley Bell is the founder of Black Girl Ventures, a 5-chapter nonprofit creating access to capital for Black and Brown women. Guys, I got my daughter here, 6-week-old yesterday. Word is that you guys have some kids around in the world also. Is that true? Can I confirm?
It is.
What do we got?
I have a 4-year-old daughter and a 8-month-old boy, Luca, and you've probably been hearing him in the background. So.
Indeed.
Go
ahead, Shelly.
I have three children. So I have a 21-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a 5-year-old.
Is that by height order? I see you doing this. Is that like?
Yeah, kind of. That's in my head. I'm like, okay, I'm almost out of college, entering into college. Like, that's the height is communicating that. And then going into kindergarten. You know?
Yeah. It's
bad. And I have a 4-year-old daughter, Rosalyn, and a 5-month-old, Mirabella, who you will definitely hear in the background at some point here.
And we should note that this, I mean, we'll say to the audience that this was in intentional here, where we feel like we chat as a group, that all too often parents, like, you kind of hide the kid. It's like 1830, children should be neither heard nor seen, which is not at all real life. So we really don't know what's going to happen, dear audience. If a kid's going to have lose it on screen, that could be a thing. It may not be a thing. That's an insight into the sheer variability of the experience. So friends, I want this to be a wider, more evergreen show on supporting your working parents. But of course, we are in a very strange moment in time, so we can't ignore the moment that we're in and maybe some lessons we'd get from there. So we're in the midst of a pandemic. We're recording here in late July 2020. How has the pandemic changed your parenting style? Has something changed? Have you been thinking about it differently? Give me a little bit of that, and yeah, let's start there. As a working parent, how have things changed during the pandemic?
Yeah, so I think for me, everybody's home. So my
all
oldest,
the time.
All the time. My oldest Damien is home, my 18-year-old Josiah is home, and my 5-year-old Skylar are all home. Interestingly enough, so they've been with me while I've built companies, right? And all three of them while I was building Black Girl Ventures, and somehow they just realized what I do. You know, so I think it's been like, wow, Mom, like, I listened to you on calls all day. I did not know you were, like, my 18-year-old thought I was sleeping most of the day because he would leave. And I would be asleep, and he would come back, and I'd be asleep. And I'm like, that's because I'm taking naps to try to, you know, work this startup life out. So I would say that, like, in that way, they're actually coming into, and they're, you would think that the older ones would be a little less disruptive than the younger ones. But they also sometimes don't have a good gauge of when to walk in or knock on the door or all the things. So with the 5-year-old doing a lot of virtual training, though, has been different for us, or like virtual school or tutoring and that kind of thing. And her just understanding the computer as a different tool, versus like YouTube Kids, you know, it's now like I actually go to tutoring on school as well. She also doesn't understand why I sit here all day, and she's like, are you going to come and play with me? And like some of her toys are like right in front of me. So we have to do like a here's your toys over here. Can you be quiet with them? Can you go in the living room with your brothers? Like, it's a whole dance kind of thing.
Actually, to piggyback off that, Shelley, I was thinking kind of very similarly that my daughter, you know, before all of this, I would go to work and it was just this, I guess, make-believe place. I would leave and then I would come home and we would play. And now all of a sudden she's hearing me all the time on the phone, on the calls. She wants to be just like mommy. And I found myself having very real conversations with her and just being very honest with her in a way that I wasn't before. You know, I talked to her about my day and what goes on and what's going on in the world. And now she's kind of trying to mimic me. She'll be in the office trying to work. The other day she told us all we had to be quiet because she had to get on an office call. I heard her down here in my office in front of my computer going, what's ERP? So it's just, it's definitely almost changed the relationship a little bit. And it's really been a balancing act, but I think in a way it's kind of made us closer too. Cause she can see what mommy does all day and that mommy can work and be a mommy at the same time. Hi, sweetie.
Yeah. I mean, we be relaxed because I'm working from home. So is my husband. So it's been a little challenging 2 months and both of us are working. So we became more flexible with screen time. Have the TV on most of the day. It's in the background. They're playing still, but YouTube and even snacks, right? We have a little basket of snacks close by. So if we are running late and making lunch or dinner, if they're hungry, they can go get a snack and eat when they're hungry. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of had to adapt and make the best of it.
Yeah.
I have this belief that I'm a first time parent. I'm 6 weeks, but we've had parents at our company before, and I've had conversation to try to understand that experience. I feel like pandemic just brought literally into the screen the experience that working parents have always had. Like the entire, you know, nothing's new about that experience. It's just that it's now literally on the screen when every single person is essentially government ordered to be at home. Do you guys have any memories of things that you think maybe non-parents don't get? Like, what are the things that either you didn't get before you were a working parent, or even just maybe you always got, but you feel it's often missed in the like work environment, that you'd be like, this doesn't mean anything to you non-parents, but it means so much to working parents that we could change or adapt to be more supportive for working parents. Are there examples or things that come to your mind?
So for me, I always thought that I either I could be successful or I could be a mom and not be able to do both. How do you even manage that, right? Give 100% of yourself to work and then also try to give 100% of yourself to your children at the same time. And when I had Rosalyn, who was actually unexpected, you know, all of that kind of changed. And I had to figure out how to channel the same amount of dedication that I give to my work into feeding her and taking care of her and being supportive and being present and being there. And something that's hard is just trying to figure out where the balance is. You know, how do you be a great employee and have the success that you want, but also be a great parent at the same time? And it never stops, especially now in the pandemic. You know, before I at least had a commute on the way to work and a commute on the way home to kind of unwind and leave work at the door so I could just be focused on my kids when I got home. Now that I'm in the pandemic, there is none of that. I go right from a work call right to taking care of my kids and vice versa. And just trying to balance all of that and always be present for both. It's tough.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So I had my first child really, really young. So I feel like I've been a parent my whole adult life,
right,
for sure. I had my oldest when I was 17, and I had my second child when I was 21, and then there's a 12-year gap, right? So I've watched the workplace over time become more friendly to dogs than it is to children. So that's what I'll say. With the birth of all the tech companies, and I mean, like, you know, I'm not that old, so like I'm all of this is happening, you know, during some of my college years. And I've watched it like over time, people like, oh, bring your dogs to work. Here's this dog park. Here's this dog thing. Dogs everywhere. We love dogs, but bring a kid, a crying kid to a restaurant and everybody's looking at you like, oh my God, can you shut that? You know, like what? So I would say like that has been so interesting to watch.
Shelly, do you have an hypothesis for why that is? That so lands with me. I don't know if I know why.
I think that, I mean, you know, if you want me to give you the what I really think it is.
It's the Twig Show. It's the real shit. I mean, this is.
You know, I think that the idea of what we can control versus what we can entertain mm-hmm. is somewhat something like there's this idea that you didn't have to have that kid if you didn't want to. Oh, but okay. Also, you should be able to have that kid be because that kid can understand every thing you're saying. They should be the most mannerable, quiet. You know, it's this like kids shouldn't be in adult spaces thing. It's this like, in my opinion, a huge lack of respect for small human beings. Whereas a dog is like a pet, it's a choice, but it's a pet. We celebrate dogs in America in a way that is somewhat obsessive on some levels. And nothing's wrong with dogs, but we just have this other feeling about them. Even the theme of the man's best friend and the hunter with the, you know, it's like very patriarchal, if you ask me. And because the role of mom and kid are like quiet behind the man in the way society views it, and the dog actually gets to be beside the man way more than we respect the wife or the kid being. And so these themes have just played out over history in our country over and over and over about like where everybody's place is. Yes. So unfortunately to look at like, we're okay with the dog being beside the man hunting, but the wife can't be there holding a gun too. Like those are, it's just playing out, just exacerbated. That's really what I think it is.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was going to have us at the tail end get to the like most important topic, but I almost feel like I want to reverse it. And I think we should, and I do want us to like get into like some parental leave stuff and some specific policies and tactics, but I almost feel like it's a better way for us to close out the show of like, all right, what do workplaces, what can you actually do? I have a 6-week-old. My wife and I have had so many conversations for the last years, probably, on like the gender equity side of it. I almost feel like we should start there. That is the issue of talking about supporting working parents. We have this enormously patriarchal society that like consistently we're seeing it play out in the pandemic. Economics research papers show that male output is growing during the pandemic and female economist output is shrinking in the pandemic. And when you back that out, it's seen that more often the mother is being deferred to for that work. And it's like super messy because sometimes it's the kid choice. Yeah. Let's talk for a minute here about how embedded gender equity, why having a progressive parental support workplace is not just a perk. It is a social justice issue. It is a, I'm saying stakes seem real big. And I wonder if that like resonates with you guys. And if you think about it through that lens of this is not just about supporting working parents, this is about bettering society. Am I overstepping?
Mm-hmm. No.
Say some more. Yeah, Juliana, yeah, please.
No, I agree. I think not only extending, you know, parental leave to men, but also making sure that they take it. You know, not all workplaces have parental leave for fathers, but the places that do have it, in my experience, I haven't seen a father take their full parental leave when their babies are born, right? They take maybe a week or two. And, you know, like at Cloud Tamer, we have up to 40 days. And I've seen people take, you know, part of it in the beginning and then part of it. I mean, and it's fine. It, depending how, you know, it works in your household.
Right.
Encouraging fathers to take that time, and it shows their employees, especially if they're higher up, if they're a manager or, you know, a senior leader at the company, I think it encourages and normalize, you know, having a family at the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Shelley, Melissa, yeah, how do you view this? Does gender equity come to your mind when you think about supporting working parents? It seems like embedded, at least for me, like it seems like it's sitting there.
I think for us, I'm sorry, my dog is sitting here barking.
Dogs count too.
I wasn't talking. Yeah. Dogs count too.
Yeah, the dog is like, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. actually, Shelley, I'll let you go first, and I'll deal with him so that I can chime in on the back end.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think, and what's interesting about social justice issues is that I feel like we always want to pull them into social service level issues, and it's like, yeah, but there's that and, right? There is this idea of, well, what does DEI mean, right? And it's so many layers to it that I think sometimes we just get lost on where to unpack it and what we can do first, because it's such a big issue. Right. I mean, so gender diversity is huge. I mean, you're trying to figure out like which thing goes first all the time. And so when things erupt in the country, like what we've been seeing over the last 2 months with the murder of George Floyd, then people start to prioritize all the different pieces of DEI. And then sometimes this gender diversity piece stays. So it'll be like, okay, we're working on gender diversity, we're working on it, boom, we need to work on race. Okay,
yeah,
we're working on race. Okay, boom, gender diversity starts pushing through again. Okay, we're working on this, and then boom, we need to work on sexual harassment, which is still gender diversity issues, right?
Right.
But then so it's like, I feel like sometimes in the workplace, there's a bunch of shiny thing syndrome, such that, not saying that all these things shouldn't be addressed, because they absolutely should. I just don't know, in the age of technology, what has taken us so long to change a process? What has taken us so long to make decisions as corporations who can do this fairly quickly? What has taken us so long? I will say, in response to the George Floyd murder, I've seen people moving in ways I've never seen before when it comes to Black Girl Ventures. I've seen levels of money move overnight that I'm like, what? Tell me, I've been working this hard for these 4 years and you could have just done that overnight.
Right.
You know, I think, so when I think of that, I bring that up because, and I'm thankful, but I bring that up because it has made me think, if we really wanted to do something, if our country, if our workplaces really wanted to do something, then they are, all those processes they keep telling us they have to go to is somewhat BS.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying don't think through it. I'm not saying don't take time to get it right. But if we're moving into a startup society, everything's a startup. Kids are a startup. we're scrapping it, right? Yeah. Like, there's no like real handbook with all the things that can possibly happen in it. So then I'm urging, you know, workplaces, employers to consider letting your employers know, your employees know, we want to try something. This may not be perfect, but we want to take a strong step toward trying something that will work. And we want to create a feedback system that will allow you to talk back to us, such that we end this like, we got to make the one decision, and after that one decision is made, everybody got to adapt it. And if you don't like it, and you just don't like it, because we thought it was the best decision to make. And that is the old school factory way of being and thinking that I would love to see people move out of, so that we can really truly address transparency around gender diversity and making it better, racial diversity, making it better, cognitive diversity, which I'm big on, and making it better, things like that.
Well, Chell, I want to like, what were you bringing to my head when you said that, it might even like bring it back to Melissa. I think so often in the boulders and pebbles metaphor that you will always, in any movement, you will have these big giant leaps, but you can't, it always, whether you like it or not, will also involve incremental change. Like, we can both say we need and must demand radical change, but still say like, yeah, but there's going to be a ton of smaller things that have to get cleaned up constantly too. Mm-hmm. And in our reporting, we find so often that companies will like feel overwhelmed by the boulders and will say, gosh, like, I don't even know how, like, I recede because I'm intimidated by all the boulders. And I want the Twitch show or our reporting to push on, like, well, you can still be working on the pebbles. Even if you don't feel ready for the boulder, like, you can say, as Juliana alluded to, you know what, we really want to push new fathers. If we happen to have fathers in heterosexual relationships, we want those fathers to take parental leave. So from the outset of that child's life, that child is not forced to assume that mother is the only outlet for support, because over then the next 5, 10, 20 years, you can try to change behaviors and give mom a better chance at it. That's a pebble. That's not like radical change, but that is part of it. And I feel like that is something that I want to be able to push companies on, that it's okay if, I mean, we want you to get to the boulders, but if you're so intimidated by the boulder or you feel like you can't get there, you can. And I think HR professionals are the frontline workers of this kind of work, which is why they're so important to me in the coverage of how can we think about our policies and how we support people to do some really big work. HR people can do incredible work. It's such a powerful role when you think about hiring practices and retention and growth. It's like, I think we underestimate that role. And that for me is what supporting working parents can come back to is, man, all these steps are not actually that radical, that can do really meaningful work. And Melissa, is any of that hitting for you of like, how do we just keep building policy and process that makes our company culture make sure that we're supporting our people in lots of different ways as people?
Yeah, absolutely. The one part I did want to touch on is I think, you know, what I've experienced in our organization is there's so many things that are going on, right, in the business on a day-to-day basis. And they have to worry about with customers, with new sales, right, making sure that there's business coming in to keep our employees staffed and to keep the business growing. And so thinking of things that don't necessarily affect you in the moment, they kind of go by the wayside, right? If I'm not a parent, I'm not going to be thinking in the forefront about parenting and the issues that my working parents are going through, right, and not using that in any way as an excuse. But I do understand that there are so many things that require your attention. It's hard sometimes to focus in on the things that are not affecting you in the moment. And so for me personally, I was one of the first people at my company to actually get pregnant while I was working there. And at that point, we did not have any kind of maternity leave or paternity leave policy in place. And it wasn't because of the fact that they didn't care or they didn't support parents. It was just that we had never really come up to a point in DCOM's history where we needed to have that in place. And so they didn't put it in place. And then I became pregnant and I was like, okay, well, what are we going to do? Right. And then it became something that we needed to tackle. And one thing that I think we've done very well, our CEO has done very well, is if there is an issue, if there is something that comes up, if there is something that is affecting his staff, he's very open to hearing about it and figuring out how can we change this? How can we make it better? But how do we make it better for everybody and not just one person? And so when the issue of paternity leave came up, it was not a question of, okay, well, how much time can we give Melissa or any other mother who gets pregnant? How much time can we give fathers? How much time can we also give adoptive parents? And making sure that it was inclusive and not just focused on dealing with the one issue at that time. And so I think that employees need to feel like they're in a safe place and a comfortable place to be able to come to people who do have that kind of decision-making power and saying like, this is an issue, this is a problem, and this is, I need support here, and what can we do to change this? And then how can we change it so that everybody can benefit from it?
So it's so challenging, I think, and I 100% agree with you and know those points. and it's so challenging to hear it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just being completely open and honest with you, transparent, is that it's so challenging to listen to that in the age of technology.
Yeah.
Because there's, if you're not, you can't throw a stone without hearing about reproductive justice right now.
Right.
You know, so it's like, what are you reading? What are these mid-level managers and these CEOs reading? Are they even thinking about their staff in that way? Like, not saying your company in particular, but it just really makes a person listening say, how dare a CEO in 2020 not step back and look at their policies without, regardless of somebody gets pregnant or not? How dare them live every day, watch the news, vote, participate as a citizen in the U.S., actively put their dollars toward any campaigns, and not think about their staff in this way? So it's so hard to listen to. Now, I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, because it absolutely does. You know, but there is a person listening to this right now who is saying, what?
Well, shit.
You know, like, are you kidding me right now? Like, a male CEO should not have to wait for a woman to get pregnant to finally make decisions about parental leave in 2020. I mean, you didn't get, well, your baby's 5 months, so I'm not sure. But ultimately, well, you know, like, so I just want to, for the voice of that person to say, like, there is a period of time that I think before the awareness that we have now has really taken hold, that people did not think about these things. And even though it seems crazy, right? But and not, like you said, it's not an excuse, you know, but if we're gonna push, with this podcast pushing people, I would say, if you're a CEO out there and you have not thought about it yet, and you vote, because I think that's my biggest thing. Do you vote? Because this stuff is being talked about all the time. Now, if you're in a silo and you're out, you know, in an area and you don't watch TV, you don't vote, any of that. Now, I don't know. I don't know if you should be running the company, but that's another conversation.
Well, Shell, what came to mind when you hit on that is the entrepreneurial journey. Like, we will have, when you spoke earlier about the startup ethos that is, come on, is this idea that you are in constant state of building. The pyramid is always unfinished. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I mean, I can say for us, we like had a one-liner when we started that was like, and if you get pregnant, you will do something. Because like on day one, like I'll push back a little bit. It's hard for me to imagine that you can't, like, there's just too many, you don't get a, no one buys the, and maybe this should exist, but no, you don't start a company with, this is our solution for all of our people problems. That's the wrong way. But I mean, like, people, solutions, people like how we manage people. I think that's the journey you go on. And I think that's like, because I would say, if you start with a playbook, you can't change it. And like the theme that maybe even like is that I want to push us into is, well, like how is parental leave adapting? So for our example, we did not have some robust parental leave policy. Actually, the first person who became a parent working for us was a father. But it's still like someone did have to like say, okay, I'm pregnant now. What do we do? And we were young and we're like, okay, all right, yeah, we want to support you. We got to build the thing. And then we built a thing, and then we had a mother, and then like, and then we had another mother, and then we, and as each person went through the experience, I think our policy's gotten better. Okay. I guess I view that as like the journey, and that's what you'll be on. Maybe that seems, I don't know, but that's my stance. It seems like, I don't know if I expect anyone to start with it or with anything.
Well, Kristen, also, you know, I will say, because I use my own personal experience as an example there, you know, this was 5 years ago. And it was when paternity leave still was not very much of a hot topic at that point in time. We are, as the United States of America, one of the only countries who actually does not have federally mandated leave. And so, again, you know, it was, you know, a part of the journey of being progressive, of getting back to, okay, this is something now that it is very important and we need to do something about it. And how can we do something about it? And again, I completely understand what you're saying as well, Shelley. Not taking away from that at all. I just am just trying to say that at that time, it wasn't something that was very, it wasn't as much of a hot topic or as a problem as it has become in the forefront when this was all going on. And I think a lot of changes still need to be made. Things definitely are not perfect, but we're working at it and we're trying to get better and we're not ignoring it, which I think would be an even bigger issue. So
if I can add, I think it's beyond think as a society, we need to normalize having families. As we talked about earlier, people like dogs more than they like kids. And the pandemic also, you know, the burden is falling more on mothers. And I, you know, fathers need to step up and do more of the like household chores, right? Do grocery shop, go do some laundry. Take 50% of that child rearing, right? And you know, that it will affect their work as well, because then they will be taking time to take their kids to the doctor and they're gonna be rearranging their, and as that happens, companies need to flex, kind of embrace that, you know, it's, we have fans and what needs to normalize. And I think maybe then company policies will start kind of, shifting and being more inclusive.
We're zooming through time, so actually I want to get us into like, so okay, what the heck is our advice, like what should companies be doing? And of course, like, let's remember, people have only been having children for the last 6 to 18 months. This is still a new thing.
Right, exactly.
We've never had parents before. It's a very new technology, this whole parent thing. The narrative arc that we see it technically is at their best, and of course not at their best, but what technology firms have forced is because they're so people powered, you know, the requirement of technology firms are their people. It is not machinery, it is humans. That means there's been considerable influence and power from people. And that is like one of the things that is now driving so much change in HR, like HR back office, you know, manage payroll in the 1980s. And now it is one of the most influential roles of bringing in people, driving culture, shaping policy. So that's what I want to make sure we spend the last bit of our time on, are like giving some real tips. So a couple ways I think we can do that. I wonder if we even just like can share something either in our own policy or just something you've seen that you think is a really like helpful policy. And I think this can be super tactical. We want like people to be able to walk away with something. I'm going to bring us back around on one that I'm thinking a lot about. But for me, as an example, I noted that we did not have a robust policy. It's grown as we've added folks. We're 8 weeks paid. You can use PTO. It's not that 12-week window yet, but we've continued to add. I think the journey for me matters a lot. But here's the specific thing that I think came actually a lot from even seeing my wife's experience of also adding, built into our policy, the chance to do some part-time transitioning in or out of parental leave is something that my wife had really wanted, the ability to like not just say, okay, I had a child, I'm off, and now I'm all the way back, allowing for some transition. That was a small, that's all I'm looking for. That's an example. Like, we added that you can opt into some part-time transitioning in and out of said parental leave. Can we start here and just do a couple examples of maybe parental leave stuff, either your own firm or just generally? There's a calendar invite that you like. What's something that you like that you think people could take that would drive either gender equity or just you know, being supportive of working parents in parental leave? A tactic that you guys like?
I do. I have, when I had my first child, when I came back from maternity leave, I was able to go time for. And that was amazing because, you know, you're used to being at home with your baby, and then all of a sudden you have to just like mental shift, right, and go back full time. That was really hard. So I transitioned, and I think that that is great. And also for mothers that are nursing their child, having a mother's room is incredible. I felt really supported, you know, by my employer at the time. I know Cloud Tamer, we have made accommodations for, you know, nursing mothers, myself included, with my second child, to, you know, have a private room to pump. So that those things are great.
At a time when we were still allowed in offices, yes, that's crucial.
I've worked in jobs where I haven't worked a job in a while. I've been working for myself, but when I did work jobs,
what's the job?
Right. What is that? Why do they do that? But when I did work field trip, so there was I worked for a company that would let us like any type of thing that happened at the school, so we would be able to easily like we didn't have to like, you know, take time off, like take our time to go to field trips. And I really love that, because being able to open up that freedom for you to be able to travel with your child to the local museum or, you know, those kinds of things was always great.
Right. I like that.
I was actually going to bring up the we call it the wellness room, but the nursing mother's room for mothers when they do come back to work, which was so incredibly helpful coming back. But also we had implemented a flexible scheduling policy as well, so that you could pick kind of your 8-hour shift. So if you needed to come in early and leave early so that you could be home to pick up your kids or get them off the bus or go to a sporting event, or if you needed to come in late because you needed to get your kids off to school or do doctor's appointments, you would be able to do that. And it really helped balance just being able to still take care of all of your work obligations, but also be a supportive and present parent.
Melissa, I could not have planned that better, because actually one of the final chunks I wanted to get at here is the idea of asynchronous work, which extends from, you know, pregnancy to parental leave through to having a 21-year-old, whom some of us have. And that for me is, I think, one of the biggest pushes that I believe the pandemic experience can really drive home. Something that we technically have always had an experience with, like, or at least tried to push that, like, if you're a great teammate and employee, if you're getting your job done, you probably should be pretty flexible. Don't really care about you checking in at, you know, 9:14. And that is so real right now, when childcare was so transformed for so many millions of Americans, in which parents had to say, okay, this 2-hour block, I now have to do this because my partner has to do this. And I just wonder if we could talk a little bit about that idea of asynchronous work. If you are a competent professional, you probably, I mean, I'll say it like this. I think a lot of the work-life balance pushes has been really healthy. Don't bring work at home. But something that I've really experienced the last 6 weeks, actually for me, like, a 10 p.m. to like 11 p.m. little email hour is actually better for me if I can, during the day, step away and support my wife otherwise. That's not me working crazy hours. That's me building a schedule around my own life.
Right.
That idea of asynchronous work, I wonder how that, like, that's different than a work-life balance thing, but it definitely overlaps. And I don't know, people have feelings about that, or is that something that comes up for you or your own journeys, and particularly the last few months of, like, asynchronous work?
So for Black Girl Ventures, we don't do our, like, you right. work, you get the work done according to how you want to do it. We just work off of deadlines. So you don't necessarily have to report anywhere. I mean, we do have weekly meetings that we know are happening, because they're weekly. It's okay if you miss one. So we don't work so closely on, like, between these hours and these hours, things have to be that doesn't work for me as an entrepreneur. So I definitely did not want that to be the case. But one of the things I mentioned in this instance is more about, like, accelerator programs and incubator programs. And so what I found is trying to push a founder into 13 weeks of a full day, everyday experience does not work for all founders. And so one of the, I'm testing one right now, and it's funny because I like literally 10 minutes before this was like, okay, I got to get up because I was up with them from 5 to 8 a.m. Mm. So I allowed them to choose alternative times to do the training. So we did 5 to 8 a.m. for one group, and another group chose 8 to 11. So I'm experimenting with what does that actually mean to look at other hours of the day that you can get things done, because your work-life balance might be I'm an early bird, but and I just want to, you know, I want to get up at 5, but, you know, around 9, I want to sleep till noon. You know, just trying to figure out, like, what would it look like to accommodate your human clock, in a way.
And Melissa, it sounded like you were saying just that, of like shifts. Like that I think is something that workplaces are confronting, of the super strict 9 to 5. I do get it. Like there's something that does transform for younger employees or larger organizations, but a degree of, particularly for your high performers, it feels like, do you really care if at a specific time, do you really care? Is that something you're experiencing?
Yeah. So were you going to say something, Julianne? I'm sorry.
No, I was just like, we don't care as long as you're producing. I think it's, you know, that trust, thank you. Trust and accountability, right? Like things need to get done. As long as you get it done, I don't care if you're doing it at midnight. Right?
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, I mean, it's always been the same mentality with our organization as well. And we're all adults. We hire professionals who can get the job done as long as it's getting done. You know, there are things that are in place, you know, through performance management and making sure that people are held accountable so that the job responsibilities are fulfilled. But we also understand that people have personal lives and things come up, and they are not often at opportune times. So just, yeah, get the work done. And when you do it is on you.
I don't want us to, as we're closing, wrapping up here, I can already hear some in our audience, like this does not mean working 24/7, right? Like there's a line here that we're trying to, like, asynchronous work does not mean work constantly. It means work in an environment that allows for you to succeed. I think, though, that's something that as organizations we're going to grapple with, because I also think it's reasonable for a company to say, we need some band of time where most of us are working so we can do the meetings or the creative conversations. Like, need some overlap. I think that is a healthy tension that we're going to keep confronting as professionals, of how do we build in time. And I hope working parents can put more of their kids metaphorically in front of the camera to drive forward the idea that this is part of life, and we want the human race to continue. So we need more humans to exist. And so that's really important. We're about to go, but I wanna like give you guys each a final send off. If you know, a friend or a colleague of someone said, hey, I'm just getting started, or I don't think my organization's as supportive of working parents as they can be, is there some like place you'd want them to start, or like one piece of advice you'd give them? Anything you'd want to like send people off with thinking if they want to like improve their support of their parent employees?
I would just kind of going back to the situation right now with the pandemic, is we didn't choose this. You know, this was forced on us. And so we're still trying to be 100% engaged employees, but also, you know, take care of our children and feed them and support them and be there for them constantly. And so just trying to make your employees feel relaxed about that, because the added stress that it causes of, okay, I have to get on a call, but I got to make sure that my kids are fed and occupied and they're not going to make any noise. And what happens if they jump into the window pane? You know, that stress in and of itself is kind of nerve-wracking. And so just letting your employees know, like, it's okay. We understand, you know, this is the new way of life. It's okay if your kids are around. You don't have to hide them. I think would definitely help for more productive employees right now.
Mm. And flexible, right? Like, kids need to... doctor's appointments. They have, you know, dentists and therapists, right? So being flexible with their schedule, and if they have to take some, you know, a couple hours during the day, but then they will make it up at some other time. I think that's important to kind of allowing that flexibility.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for employees who don't have children, like try and give some grace to those who do. So employee to employee relations right now can also be trying, because, you know, you might be a little bit annoyed that, you know, they have the obligation that that you don't, and you know, are looking for things to be done a certain way. So just openly communicate and just actually give really true deadlines. Like, can you do this by Friday at noon? You know, be really specific. I mean, that's a great practice overall, but like, I think especially when you know that someone has a newborn and may have to take a nap, you know, like, you know, if you could just make sure and become more aware of pushing those very specific like conversations and deadlines, and if they can't, you know, letting them be able to communicate that. So just a little bit of grace all the way around.
A little bit of grace. I love that. It could be the name of your memoir. A joke we have at technically is secretly, like, having kids is actually the only thing that as a human race we know we're supposed to do. Everything else we do is secretly made up. And the only thing we're supposed to actually do is have children. That's it. That's what biology tells us. So, I mean, that's all we're meant to do. All right. That is this unorthodox, child-friendly episode of The Twid Show. Thank you to Melissa, Juliana, and Shelley for joining me. As always, friends, make sure to like and subscribe. We have other episodes linked here. Follow us for future conversations about building better companies. We'll see you. Thanks, everybody.
See ya. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm still recording because I can't hit the record button. Bye, everybody.